Soldiers, sailors, and airmen of the Allied Expeditionary Force, you are about to embark upon the great crusade toward which we have striven these many months. The eyes of the world are upon you. The hopes and prayers of liberty-loving people everywhere march with you. In company with our brave allies and brothers in arms on other fronts, you will bring about the destruction of the German war machine, the elimination of Nazi tyranny over the oppressed peoples of Europe, and security for ourselves in a free world. Your task will not be an easy one. Your enemy is well-trained, well-equipped, and battle-hardened. He will fight savagely. But this is the year 1944. Much has happened since the Nazi triumphs of 1940-41. The United Nations have inflicted upon the Germans great defeats in open battle, man to man. Our air offensive has seriously reduced their strength in the air and their capacity to wage war on the ground. Our home fronts have given us an overwhelming superiority in weapons and munitions of war, and placed at our disposal great reserves of trained fighting men. The tide has turned. The free men of the world are marching together to victory. I have full confidence in your courage, devotion to duty, and skill in battle. We will accept nothing less than full victory. Good luck, and let us all beseech the blessing of Almighty God upon this great and noble undertaking.
First of all, I just want to tell you what a great show you got. I listen to you all the time.
Thank you, thank you. What do you want to talk about?
Hey, did I tell you guys I got a goat?
Sergeant Andrew Meyer's great-grandfather actually served in World War II, and Tim Joyce just had a great little historic bit of weather news about the D-Day.
D-Day was supposed to be on June the 5th, but there was a front moving through, so they postponed it to the 6th because the weather was going to be better, and so that front pushed through. So the German forces dealt with a lot of rain and showers, but the folks that hit the beaches had relatively clear skies.
They were really worried, too, that the Germans were going to be tipped off because they had to hold off, and they were just, you know, right there offshore.
Hard to hide such a huge, massive invasion.
That's
the scale is what's so incredible.
Yeah, it really is, yeah. But, you know.
Important weather forecasts in the world.
That's darn right.
Absolutely.
Except for this weekend. No pressure.
Yeah, except no pressure. Not at all.
Little column A, little column B.
Yeah, baby!
Hey, welcome aboard. Good morning, good evening, or good afternoon, wherever you are, whatever you do. A lot of things happening in the world today. Most of them are far beyond our control, you might say. So perhaps it's time we took a pause and thought about life and thought about the laws of gravity, the invasion, its legacy, its meaning, what it all means today, politics and or the news. Don't touch that dial. Just try to hear me out for a little while. 75 years ago today, the Allies stormed the beaches of Normandy. The Great Crusade was underway. It was the day of days. What about the other 2,193 days of World War II? Do they matter? What else is new, am I right? Here's how you get a hold of me. Text machine is area code 209-565-DAVE. That's 209-565-3283. The email is dave@thedavebowmanshow.com. And, of course, we're on the web. Use your preferred non-denominational web search browser to take you to thedavebowmanshow.com. Or you can look up the show. Just look for The Dave Bowman Show on Facebook, Twitter, and iTunes. Any one of those will get you to what's going on here. Ego bibere capulis et olive verve. I drink coffee that others might live. Today, I think that's me. I'm not feeling really well. Ben is still homesick. I think I'm coming down with whatever it is that he had or has. I won't be descriptive, but there you go. Today is, of course, June 6th. It's the anniversary, the 75th anniversary of the D-Day landing. It's also my parents' wedding anniversary, so happy birthday or happy anniversary, Mom and Dad. Love you very much. D-Day is it's one of those seminal moments in history. It's one of those things that's easy to talk about because it was so incredible and so amazing, and because we won. If we hadn't won, perhaps maybe it wouldn't be quite as easy to talk about. I mean, we don't really dwell on some of the other things that went wrong. We hardly ever talk about, you know, Tarawa. We don't here's an invasion that went horribly wrong. I mean, we won, but the invasion itself was a total and utter disaster. And this was really the first time that Americans had been exposed to the idea that, well, I mean, it was one of the first times that bodies, pictures of American bodies were posted in newspapers. And it was the first time that really post Battle of Midway, we really began to question some things about, you know, are we doing this the right way? Because it was such a disaster. It was such a mess. And we never talk about the sacrifice of the men of Tarawa. We should, but we don't. There were 2,194 days in World War II. I don't know if you knew that or not. I only know that because once upon a time I had a book called 2,194 Days of War, and it was a look day by day at the Second World War. And there were so many things in it that we just don't even know about. Things like the bombing of Chongqing that happened on June 6th. Now, it was 1943, but it was still June the 6th. The bombing of Chongqing was a travesty. It was a war crime. It was the Japanese justified this by saying, you know, there were terrorists, there were resistance fighters, whatever. But they literally spent 3 or 4 days just flattening the city with bombs, killing well over 4,000 civilians on this day in 1943. It was just an indiscriminate thing. It was just a thing where they just decided to carry that out. And we never talk about that. We don't talk about Chongqing. We don't talk about Tarawa. We don't talk about any We Talk. We don't talk about Kasserine Pass. I mean, obviously military historians do, but as a general populace, as a general people, when we speak of World War II, we talk about the big events, D-Day, Pearl Harbor, those sorts of things, but we don't, somehow or another, those other 2,193 days, we don't like to talk about them. And I'm not absolutely clear why. I mean, it's easy to psychoanalyze it and go, well, it's because it was a big event. And it's because it's easy to grasp the concept of D-Day. It's easy to grasp the concept of Pearl Harbor. We were attacked. We were backstabbed. And so we can be morally outraged with ease. And D-Day, as President Eisenhower, President General, then General Eisenhower said, you know, it was the beginning of the Great Crusade. We're going to liberate Europe from Nazi oppressionism. There's no gray area when it comes to D-Day other than the weather that day and the photography. There's no gray area. It was black and white. It was good versus evil. It was clear what we were trying to do and what we were going to do and why we were doing it. Same with Tarawa, same with Kasserine Pass, same with Kursk, same with these other battles that were equally significant, I think, if you're looking at military history, but somehow or another have gotten subsumed and forgotten about. And I just, I struggle with this sometimes because I was reading this morning, Mike Millsap, writer.com is one of my favorite blogs. I love to read Mike's writing. Number one, he's a very good writer. But number two, he gets more into philosophy than he does of events. And he likes to draw the philosophy into today. What does this mean to me today? And he was writing this morning about the idea that he has a 13-year-old son. How do we communicate this idea of war and conflict to young people? And should we? I mean, should we just tell them the good things about it? You know, on D-Day, we stormed ashore and men were sacrificed and the Nazis, you know, were beaten and kind of leave it at that. Or should it be more detailed? Should it be more deep in the sense that we need to explain to them why these things were happening? And it's a fascinating to me discussion because I've spent years as a historian. World War II was once upon a time my passion. I will tell you that point blank. But for me, it's no longer my on fire passion. There are other things that have replaced that. That doesn't mean it's a little less serious. But when I think about what do I tell Ben about this, how do I communicate this to Ben? I think of my own life when I was a child. There was never a time when I did not know, when I was not aware of the occurrence of World War II. I as long as I can remember. Why? Because my grandfather was in the Army Air Corps during the war. My Uncle Mick was a sailor aboard destroyers during the Second World War. My Uncle Bill who I did not know that well, and I didn't know that much about him, but he was a paratrooper. He was in the 82nd Airborne, 504th Parachute Infantry Regiment, and had served in the European theater. He'd made jumps in North Africa. He'd made jumps in Sicily. He'd served in Italy. He would later make the jump at Market Garden. These were the normal people around. Even when I was in high school, my best friend's dad was a veteran of Anzio. And, you know, he was a hard guy. I mean, he didn't like to talk to people. And, you know, it's interesting. I wish I could go back now, knowing what I know now, to talk to him, as opposed to what I thought I knew as a high school junior and senior, and talking to him, because, you know, we were experts in the war. We played war games and we read books, and so we knew everything there was, except we'd never actually been in one, and he had. And maybe having that opportunity to talk to him about that would have been important to us, because it would have related some of the things about combat and war that we didn't really grasp, we didn't really understand, we didn't really feel at that point. And I think, you know, I say this all the time, we don't know what war is. We really don't. As a nation, we've long since forgotten what war is. Sure, the newspapers will print casualty lists if there's a president in office whom they don't like. If there's a president in office who they do like, they just conveniently ignore that. And so they try to convey this false sense of virtue signaling that this is bad, and until they politically agree with what's going on, and then they ignore it. And so we don't get that feeling anymore. You know, you don't walk down your block and see four or five gold stars in the windows anymore. You see occasional stuff. You see those kinds of things. But as a general rule of thumb, you don't see a lot of that. And I wonder what it's like, what it would be like now to have such a conflict. And I wonder what the kids today, Ben and Mike's 13-year-old son, how they would react to that. I mean, it's a different world. There's no two ways about the fact that it's a different world. When D-Day happened in 1944, of course, the New York Times and the papers had to report it. They were excited to report it. Not only were they excited to report it, but they reported it in such a way that would be today would leave people, you know, questioning things. You would have your conspiracy theorists. Well, what if this didn't really happen? What if this is just what the government wants us to think is happening, kind of approach to things? But the information, I mean, if you were to go back and read these newspapers, and in some cases I have, the information is sketchy. I don't know how they got as many column inches out of it as they did, other than to draw, you know, they got the big headline there, and then they got four or five. If you look over there on the right, there's one, two, three, four, five headlines before they ever get to an actual paragraph. Maybe that's how I did it. I don't know. Communication was much different in those days. These are people standing in front of the boards there in Times Square and watching the information roll around. And I remember this from the early 70s in Apollo 13. Remember the people watching the information come to them on these message boards in Times Square. And it seems today to be so antiquated and so strange, because we would never... That would never be enough information for us. We would be chomping at the bits going, well, I need to know more. I need to know everything. I need to know all of it. And that's changed. When you're dealing with the kids, when you're dealing with these young people today, I struggle sometimes with how to teach them, how to teach Ben especially, and others have the same issue with how to teach them about conflict and how to teach them about war and what it all means and why we do it. Instead, these days, we argue about the meaningless points. I was going to watch The Longest Day today. I was going to load that up, and it's a very long movie, as you know, but it's the story of what happened on D-Day. And I don't know if I was bemused or angry or disappointed. One of the conversations that I've had on many occasions with an author that I know real well, who's concerned about technical details, is stop worrying about technical details. Tell a good story. Tell a good story first, then worry about the technical details. And one of the complaints about the movie, The Longest Day, and multiple people have made this complaint, and given this massive movie, this incredible tale of the Overlord invasion, the complaint is that John Wayne's character, the character that John Wayne is playing, which is Lieutenant Colonel, I forgot his name now, but he's one of the paratroopers and he's leading the American paratrooper regiment into combat. And John Wayne is too old to play him. The actual character was in his mid-20s, and John Wayne plays this, of course, in his 40s. And so somehow or another, this is supposed to make me go, well, I shouldn't watch that movie because John Wayne's too old. And that's a technical flaw. And I wonder if you've got people that are paying that kind of attention to things, do they ever really get the story of what happened to the paratroopers and what they accomplished that day and how they did it or any other day? I mean, if we're arguing about how old John Wayne was when he portrayed a character during World War II, how are we ever going to talk about how old the men who died at Tarawa were? How are we ever going to talk about how old the men aboard USS Wahoo were when they met their maker? I struggle with that because, again, you're trying to tell a story that's been told so many times that people now seemingly are no longer listening to the story. They're trying to pick it apart. We could sit here and talk about the story of D-Day and the things that went on. And I thought seriously about doing that. I read a great article the other day about the crickets, the devices the paratroopers use, and I wanted to go there. But Mike's column kind of got me distracted this morning with this whole philosophy of this and how do we talk to people. And this was driven home even further this week by Vice President Mike Pence, who was the commencement speaker at West Point. And I don't know if you saw this or not, but he was telling the graduates at West Point, the brand new Army lieutenants, that, well, his exact words, let me pull them up here. His exact words were, "It is a virtual certainty that you will fight on a battlefield for America at some point in your life. You will lead soldiers in combat. It will happen. Some of you may be even called upon to serve in this hemisphere." And I thought Mike's comments this morning were spot on. I mean, it's easy to explain World War II. It really is. It's very easy to explain Nazis, Japanese Empire bad, Italians bad, America, Russia, England, France, good. We had to destroy the bad. We had to destroy the ideas that Nazism had come to stand for, and we had to destroy the ideas that they had put into place and into practice, and the destructions of wholesale peoples because of, you know, racial identities and because of biases and that sort of thing. And it's easy to get lost in the Holocaust when it comes to World War II. It really is. Where is the meaning? What is the most, I guess what I was looking for is, what if I had to pick one picture to describe World War II, what would it be? It could be the Holocaust. It could be that. It could be Tarawa. It could be, you know, D-Day. It could be any of those things. How do you find that moment that absolutely tells what war is when you're trying to tell a child, a young person, what it really is, the destruction that it causes, and that it may be necessary, but the reason it becomes necessary has to be clear. In World War II, it was. In other wars, maybe not so much. It certainly wasn't as clear when it came to Vietnam. I mean, you'd have a hard time convincing me, and I lived during that era, exactly what it was that was going on. I have the same questions now about Afghanistan and Iraq. And again, I'm someone who supported going into there. But here we are 19 years later, 18 years later, and we don't have those answers anymore, do we? And so how do I explain to Ben, this is why we need to do this? It's real easy to say, well, because the terrorists will win if we don't. But is it really just that simple? Is all of this meaningless? Is all of this come down to that? I don't know. I don't know anymore. I do know that on this day in 1944, there was none of those questions existed. None of those questions were in anybody's mind, as General Eisenhower said, this is the Great Crusade. We are going to free Europe from the German war machine, from the Nazis. The reality is that today his speech would be, his little speech there would be parsed into, you know, why didn't he say this, or why didn't he say that there were bad Nazis? Why didn't he, you know, why didn't he say what I wanted him to say? That's how much things have changed in the ensuing 75 years. Across the way they went and dropping into Paris and or dropping into France, into northern France, to start that process. I've met in my lifetime so many of those who were involved in this, so many who did those things, and I stare at these pictures across time. And for that, for my money, this picture of these pathfinders, these are men who were dropped before anybody else. Their job was to go down and light the way for the other paratroopers to come in. And they look, if you look deeply into their eyes, it's hard to express what they're seeing, except for the one guy in the back row on the far right, the second man from the right. He's got a cup of coffee. And I don't know why, but that picture fills me with belief and hope and understanding that you know, maybe this is the picture that captures what war is really all about. Maybe this is what it means. These guys, knowing that they have to do something that's difficult, knowing that they have to do something that's hard, knowing that they have to go and face all of this. It's hard to say for sure what it all is. But as we look now at this morning, that's the picture from this morning, and 75 years later, as the sun rose over Omaha Beach and people gathered to remember what had happened there, I wonder how many of them thought about the rest of the war, the other 2,193 days of that war, and the things that happened and the people that were lost and the staggering numbers of people that were lost. Like I said, we see a battle that kills 100 or two, and we're stunned. 4,000 died that day, more than 4,000 in Chongqing. Tairoa cost us many men. Other battles, Guadalcanal, cost us thousands upon thousands, and we never even really bat an eye anymore about it, do we? We just sort of let it go. And so I struggle with this, and I think to myself, and I've tried through the years, and I was having a conversation with a friend a few weeks ago who runs a really excellent page about history by day, and he starts 85 years ago with World War II, and he used to have a page called 75 years ago, but it got a little cumbersome, and so now he only does the 85, but he still posts pictures from 75 years ago. And he posted a picture that I'd seen before, and it never really connected with me, and for some reason that day it did. In the build-up to D-Day, of course, there was a great deal of effort prior to that to ensure that the German rail infrastructure and road infrastructure was destroyed, and their mechanical, their industrial stuff was destroyed, and the bombers kept going in and in and in, and against incredible odds. I mean, I'm a submariner, folks. It's very easy for me to talk to you about the sacrifice of United States submariners. One in five submarines was lost. One in seven men were lost. It's the highest percentage rate of any service in the United States service. And I'm proud of that. I'm dedicated to making sure you remember those men and their sacrifice in those boats. But air crews, man, they did that too. And he posted this picture, this very simple picture of a B-17 bomber somewhere over Germany. And you see the bombs falling, and you realize that this is taken from a plane that's above that plane. And as the bombs are falling, you see that one of them has hit the left rear stabilizer of the plane, and it has been torn off. And in this moment, captured in time, this moment, what you realize looking at that picture is that something has gone devastatingly wrong. And while these men are carrying on the Great Crusade, while they are doing what must be done for right to defeat evil, sometimes bad things happen in war. And you realize that there are, what, 12 men on that plane right there? And you wonder, if you're looking at that picture in that moment, you wonder what's about to happen to those 12 men. Okay, this is a B-17. It's legendary for its toughness. It's an incredible plane. We've seen the pictures of the planes that fly back half shot up and everything else. And you think to yourself, well, maybe they'd be okay. But then you find out that, you know, rear stabilizers to airplanes are pretty important. And without them, they don't work real well. And you find out that all 12 men in that plane died in the next few minutes. And I think for me, for D-Day, for Tarawa, for Guadalcanal, Kasserine Pass, Kursk, this is the moment that captures the devastation of the war. And what the lesson that I want my son to understand is that sacrifices made for good are important, but you need to understand that they are sacrifices and they are difficult to handle. They are difficult to look at. They are moments that are going to hurt, but they are required. So you better make damn well sure when you drop those bombs out and they accidentally hit your friend's bomber that it's for a good reason. You better make sure that the reason we're sacrificing even one life means something. And if it doesn't, then don't do it. In the next few moments, those men were going to die. And they knew it. War is hell. And it's a good thing that we don't become very fond of it. But it's also a good thing that we study it so that we understand why it's necessary when it is necessary. And when it's not necessary, we learn those lessons and we get the hell out and stop screwing things up. Most importantly, it's important that we teach the next generations so that they don't make the same mistakes. I got to get going. Take the time right now. Tell the people that matter in your life you love them very much. You'd miss them if they weren't there. So don't pass up those opportunities. You don't want to have that regret. Plausibly Live, I'm Dave Bowman. This is my show, The Dave Bowman Show, right here on the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. We will see you tomorrow for the President and the Constitution. Have a great rest of your day, everybody. Remember, not just D-Day, but all 2,194 days of the war.
The Dave Bowman Show is a Slippery Fish Entertainment production for the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. For more information or to complain about how the show offended you, the text or voicemail number is 209-565-DAVE. For more information about the show, log on to thedavebowmanshow.com.
Hey, I'm going to go do something productive. I'm going to go watch television.